Hello, everyone, and welcome to the seventh episode of What's Wrong With The Podcast.
My name is Punar Givanch, and I'm the managing partner of Eraikur Baho, an award-winning architecture and design studio based in New York and Istanbul with a mission of creating concepts that address urban, social, and environmental problems.
Today, we have the privilege of talking to Maggie O'Carroll. Maggie is a leader in the field of women's enterprise and has dedicated her professional life to improving the economic position of women in the UK and internationally. Recognizing that women were a huge untapped entrepreneurial market in the UK and Europe, Maggie saw that there were both commercial and social impact opportunities in providing business support services to help more women to start and grow their own enterprises. In 1996, Maggie founded Northwest-based award-winning Women's Economic Development Agency, the Women's Organization, in Liverpool, England. In 2011, O'Carroll opened the doors to a £5.3 million Women's International Centre for Economic Development, having secured funding from European Regional Development Fund, Liverpool City Council, and Future Builders. Located in the heart of Liverpool, is the first center of its kind in the UK, expected to help 3,000 women set up businesses and creating 4,500 new jobs over its first 10 years. Welcome, Maggie.
Thank you, Pinar. How are you doing?
We're really delighted to have you here today and have you as our first podcast in 2020. And can you please tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I'm originally from Ireland, but I'm based in the UK formerly came from a small farm in the west of Ireland, but decided that after college, I'd spend a little bit of time over in the United States, actually. And that was a major influencer in terms of the kind of work that I do now. The kind of work that I am involved in is I head up a social business, the largest social business for women's economic development in the UK. And our work is very much focused on how we can get more women, A, into the workplace, B, progressing within the workplace, and also into business and growing their enterprises. So we're very much focused on that work, and that's the work that I do and try and influence policy, working with our research scholars, conduct some research ourselves, and also collaborate not just locally, but nationally and internationally. So that's why I'm so delighted to be able to talk to you today.
And we're really happy to have you. Well, I mean, as a fellow woman, this is already, very fascinating for me, and I 100% support it. But I'm also really frustrated that now, officially being in 2020, this is still a very much of a valid and a big conversation globally. So let's talk a little bit about, like, even before going into employment, women's education, the problems we see there, employment and entrepreneurship. So what do you see, whether locally or internationally?
Well, I think the picture is different depending on where you live in the world, obviously. And I think whilst we have got some definite deficits in terms of women's participation and the quality and the outcome of that participation in the labour market in terms of how much they get paid, how they're promoted, how they're enabled and supported, there are some good news stories. And I think, I'm delighted to say that it's in the US is one of the areas that one of the greatest transformations happened in relation to women in business and female entrepreneurs, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have helped, create, a jump of starting off probably in the early 1970s of 500,000 women-owned businesses to over 12 million owned businesses by women now. It's phenomenal. And also, the jobs that those women businesses are creating, it's, again, from 250,000 up to nearly 10 million. These are big figures in terms of big progress, big jump. And it's the jobs, it's the businesses, but it's also the contribution to the economy. So you're talking about sort of in the region of, it's moved from billions to trillions. And I think consequently, that's what you have to sort of think, that you have to see where progress and opportunity has been made. And in the US, there has been significant progress made in this field. Now, unfortunately, in Europe, we're still on the catch up. And we're lagging behind, because almost 48% of your business startups are started up by women. But here in the UK and wider, more broadly in Europe, it's lagging between 20 to 30%. And that translates to some pretty big numbers in economic loss to society. So on the one hand, it's not, you know, a very it's not a perfect picture, but certainly there has been phenomenal progress in this field. But what we have to do is we have to get more women starting and growing, because the primary issue that exists not only just here in Europe but also in the US is the fact that those women aren't growing at the same rate as their male counterparts. So consequently, profitability, and also in terms of what they get out of those businesses and financial rewards, are also limited. So it gets stuck. Those businesses get stuck under the million dollar mark, and we've got to move them off the $1 billion mark.
Why do you think that is? I mean, I feel like, you know, in 1970s, women were women. Obviously, yeah. You know, there were women rights, and with that shift and having more women in education, it was evident that a woman's participation in business would also grow. But why do you think, like, now we have, you know, we see good case examples. We know a lot of women-owned businesses now, yet still some countries, and those countries may not even necessarily be a country that has a low education level. But why do you think this still exists and it still requires a push?
Well, I think there are layers of reasons. It's not just one reason, but I think some of the factors that are involved that make it more easy or more difficult for women to progress in the area of entrepreneurship is that, well, firstly, it's important to count who we are and who's starting the businesses. And I think you'd find it shocking around the globe, given that we've got access to ways of measuring data and, you know, unpicking and unpacking, understanding data and collecting data, that many governments to this day are still not collecting the data. So we don't know how women or men, it's all homogenized into one sort of bucket. So consequently, women are, you know, effectively silenced. We're not quite sure where they are. So I think one of the things that the US have done very effectively is they started to count and measure and use the statistics. And so therefore, they're not trying to sail this boat without a compass. They've got a compass. They've got an opportunity to actually see exactly where they're going. So the first thing is about the statistics. Know your statistics, have your research, have your data, understand where you're going. You mentioned earlier education and entrepreneurship education. The infrastructure for education tends to steer women into particular types of programs of learning. And so we do have this issue of women in STEM. And, you know, higher earning and higher yield businesses in the financial and the STEM world are where women don't tend to be present. And so consequently, that impacts on their their earnings and their progress in that field. And the whole entrepreneurship and education infrastructure itself, it's only becoming more popular now, or seen as more important, that entrepreneurship education should be in every program, regardless of whether you're in veterinary surgeon, architecture, you know, any field, the world of health, the world of education itself should really be focusing and having some types of program to support and promote entrepreneurship as an option for postgraduate employment.
And I guess the like there are different challenges in, you know, whether it being employed in corporate life or being an entrepreneur or an intrapreneur yourself. And, you know, having been on both sides or having many women friends who are in, you know, different type of industries and businesses, I firsthand see challenges where, you know, first of all, if you are employed within a larger company, then their women find themselves adapting to a business life that is defined by men, right? And this especially comes into play either during a motherhood phase or like pregnancy or postpartum. And during all these stages, women find themselves either in a position where they're judged or they're falling behind, or they feel like they're insufficient or inefficient all the time because they feel like they can't deliver 100% at work or they can't deliver 100% at home. But they still want to continue their job and careers, but they have a big shift in their life that they need to adapt to without almost having anyone in the business feel what's going on for some reason, because that's the state we, and still even in the United States, the state we find ourselves in. In entrepreneurship, I mean, we all know how much dedication and time and resources it takes. So again, with that, I guess, without a team or building that team to yourself, it is almost impossible to, you know, go about your life and do everything and also start a business from scratch and grow it. And there are challenges around building that team or getting funding, depending on the country, just because they are women or people perceive, well, or like most of VC money goes into men-founded businesses, or women find it somehow more challenging to build that team. And you also mentioned the education and the predefined industries almost for women. So that also puts them in a position to sort of put together that team and work harder for that. What is your experience or like perception of this thing too? Like because there are abundance of challenges, but they're very different depending on what type of employment you're seeking.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the kind of discussion that we have around female entrepreneurship and women in employment doesn't seem to apply to their male counterparts, despite, you know, I think the last time I kind of checked in on this, I think, you know, children and caregiving was part and parcel of the family role as opposed to that of just the female role. But
yeah,
reality is that it's still, this is what we have. We've got this societal sort of devolved position. And I think that's shifting, but the problem is that it's not shifting quick enough. It's glacially slow. And I think whilst employees and dads, families really want to spend more time with their children, want to have a more flexible and more better work-life balance, I think the design of work needs to be sort of nearly, you know, ripped up and start again, because it just is so outdated and modus. And so we're really kind of backward looking in terms of actually how you undertake your work, where you undertake it from. Are we really as productive as we could be? In fact, if we were to work differently, we probably could be more productive. Is it more about just hanging a jacket at the back of the chair in the office? I think there's a lot of that kind of macho nonsense alive, well, and kicking. And it's remarkable because in actual fact, some of the studies will show that, you know, none of these things aren't, it's not actually making it a nation or a state or a country more productive or an industry more productive. In actual fact, it's probably making it less productive. So I think for me, I think all of those things of, you know, how we work, and I think that's the same for men and women. I think the way work is designed is just not fit for purpose. So we're going to have a radical rethink of that. So those, design possibilities, I think, are endless. I think, you know, given that we've got the use of technology and we've got the ability to be able to communicate across boundaries and, you know, just in terms of our design thinking, it just hasn't been utilized properly at all. So we're still, policy hasn't caught up. Neither has, you know, mainstream industry. They're still kind of back in the day of time and motion. It really is quite shocking to me, really. And I think that that's why people are taking the option of jumping out of those jobs and jumping out of the corporate world, and particularly women, because they're sick to death of it. They can see, they have the answers. Employees have the answers. Customers and consumers have the answers. But actually, the overall infrastructure and system is just it seems to be incapable of catching up. So you'll continue to have these issues about a lack of flexibility. You'll have, you know, the caregiving, aging population is one of the critical issues. I don't know how these corporates are going to find their talent, because, you know, they won't be able to keep the talent, because people have actually a different kind of set of drivers now. Sustainability is a key driver. We want better outcomes for our children, our grandchildren. So, you know, we're just going to have to operate business, and the world's corporate worlds will have to change. My concern is that it's just not changing quick enough.
And you're so right, because if, you know, the business models and corporate life, these were so much better designed, then we wouldn't be seeing such a, you know, gap between even gender inclusion within industries, possibly, because women wouldn't try to adapt to something that just, you know, either biologically or physically doesn't work for them, right? And I think as women try to, the percentage of women being in industries increase, I think this is also maybe pushing the industries to sort of shift a little bit. Just because they see maybe it's not feasible, but you're right. Like, everything happens very, very slow, and we almost, and I see policy always lags, right? So it's almost like it's the responsibility of the biggest corporates in the world to sort of set an example of how things should be done. And then there should be a trickle down effect from there. You know, many of the big like tech companies that are sort of like way more laid back and or inclusive in how they do business, still there's a lot of things that are not discussed there. I mean, for example, you know, companies are very keen on being dog friendly these days, which I love. but also, you know, if you also bother to set up maybe professional daycares within your businesses, then women wouldn't have such a hard time coming back from maternity leave to work, right? I actually know women who had to leave their jobs because they couldn't find a nanny or a right daycare to leave their children, and they couldn't get more than 3 months maternity leave, which is insane. I mean, in 2020, this still shouldn't be happening.
I agree. I mean, you know, it seems to me that, you know, it's an interesting example about dog care. I think we need to have dog care and child care.
Yes.
And elder care.
And
we need to have flexibility around those things. What I would say is that I suppose the one thing I might probably change around slightly is that I have little faith in the ability of large corporates to change their modus operandi very, very quickly or quickly enough. In fact, and I don't know if they've got the ambition or the insight, to be honest with you. Mm. I think that our smaller, our new starts, that's where I'm seeing that, you know, the new, you know, we're talking about, you know, a very, very, significant crop of new start entrepreneurs every year in the United States and globally, and these are the ones that are actually going to break through. They're going to be able to you know, sort of see it, look into the future and basically say, look, we know what's happening here in terms of how am I going to be able to get the best talent, maintain the best talent, and more importantly, what's good going to look like for me and my family as an entrepreneur? And I think that there will be a shift. There's a values, I think there'll be a values, you know, a redefinition of what people's values are. Sustainability and the climate emergency is going right up the list. And so consequently, business and the way we work will have to change. I think our large, and even, so I think they do a good job at in some of our large, like, for example, tech companies that are, you know, perhaps even the ones that are involved in helping us communicate, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I think they do a nice job at the moment in talking about promoting a hip and a progressive brand. But in actual fact, I don't think it's going to be then. I think there's a crop coming in now, because in actual fact, most of those, even today, some of your, you know, big California tech companies were talking about, you know, assisting quite recently, actually, that this year, I think, or sorry, 2019, was talking about actually helping women be maintained in the workplace by, you know, supporting them freezing their embryos. Now, in real terms, that's kind of, you know, a little bit creepy in my world. but seriously, this was covered in the BBC. I did an interview on it, and I was like saying, you know, Facebook, get out of my reproductive rights.
Right.
Nothing to you with you. You know, women will have children and families will have children when they're good and ready, not when you know, it's optimum time for your, you know, balance sheet and your report to the market.
That's so creepy.
Yeah. So as you can see, I'm a little bit reticent about our large corporates. I think what we've got to, you know, the new generation of entrepreneurs are looking for something different. I have every kind of, I'm really optimistic about them. I'm really optimistic about our new and future leaders in terms of, you know, what's going to be important to them. And is profit, money, monetary outcome and shareholder value going to be the, you know, the panacea? I think that's going to shift. It might be shift in my lifetime, but it's certainly going to shift. That's the thing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we have a good, and speaking of data, we have a good amount of data from the accumulated from the past decades of just, you know, profit, how profit driven companies end up or what type of challenges they face. And if you only seek profit, you're not necessarily a sustainable business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see this not all, you know, I guess in general, like women's caregiving and nurturing characteristic really sort of helps to the business side in that case too, because I see a perspective there that is not just profit, but also aware of other, whether that is social or environmental problems. Sure. And in addition to that, I see there's a generational change too, where millennials and Gen Z is just questioning more, expecting more transparency, honesty, just sustainable choices, and also, you know, not doing something just for the sake of it, but getting either a unique experience out of it, or even, you know, making an impact or solving a problem or whatever that is. So I think with women and this, like, just generational shifts, we should see much more focus on just like the wellness of a business, not just, you know, driving for the profits. That's so true.
No, I mean, from my perspective, I think, and some of the evidence will point to this as well. This is the, you know, in terms of making progress in this area, we have to have, you know, we have to have our numbers, we have to have our research, we have to understand where we're coming from. We need a robust policy to feed into a robust policy environment. But then you actually need to take actions. So our media really need to get off their, you know, usual merry-go-round of it's just men, you know, entrepreneurship, corporate leadership, leadership in general, is the preserve of the heroic male. They've just got to stop being lazy. It just is lazy. And of course, then other things need to follow. You know, the investment, you're more likely to be significantly undercapitalized if you're a woman starting a business. So the evidence is very clear. It's just that, you know, women don't have access to the same sort of networks in terms of venture capital, in terms of access to finance, and also growth potential networks to help them grow. So we do need to redraft and redesign the ecosystem of support. And we need to put investment into it. Now, that happens in you know, it's happened in the United States, and it had the correct outcomes. More women started, but they're not enough women are growing. You now need to take the next step towards that. We're catching up over this side of the pond in terms of the numbers of women starting. But again, we need to learn from your experience and basically get them to start and get them to on the growth trajectory from the outset. And we also need to design in and support entrepreneurship education that actually looks at, you know, this, what we describe as the entrecomp model, which is looking at the person, the variety in its hierarchy. So it's not just the business itself, it's all the stakeholders, and it's the actual entrepreneur themselves. So we've developed a model of quite a robust model in the European, with the support of the European Commission. And it's one that is really looking at these kind of issues, which are, you know, the pick up on environmental sustainability. They talk about, you know, the welfare of and the progress of the person themselves and their community and the impact that they have on their community. So it really is business for good as opposed to just business for money. And we're not saying that profit's a bad thing. We're just saying that profit only can only lead to a very one-dimensional outcome. And that doesn't really bode well for the future. And moreover, you know, it doesn't really reflect back on some of the best and some of the most successful businesses that we had that were, for example, from the Quaker tradition, Cadbury's chocolate. I mean, these people have been very, very, this community of entrepreneurs were very socially responsible. Where did we lose that? That was the question. I know it's now owned by Nestle, so I, you know, maybe we should ask the chief exec or the president of Nestle about what their corporate governance and their social responsibility is. But I suspect it wouldn't have been the same as the Quakers somehow or another.
Yeah. And you know, you're right. Like, it's like, if you're just profit driven, you will be called out on it eventually. Sure. I mean, we've seen it, whether it's in the fashion industry or, food industry, like companies who did not care about health aspects, who did not care about inclusion, who did not care about environmental aspects of how they do business. Somehow something happens and it gets out. And with now more data, social media, and just like everything being a media channel on its own, that is also pushing businesses to act fairly and reasonably and socially and environmentally conscious. Just because maybe as an insurance model, right? So just because for the risk that it might even get out somehow that they're not. So I think like those like scary case examples sort of like made other corporates aware to be aware of just more than just profits. But I think like that will become the norm eventually, where you will not be a successful business if you're also not, you know, environmentally and socially conscious. And like, speaking of that, and like that ultimate goal that where we want to reach. So like, I imagine a future where we do not say best actor or best actress. And we do not say a woman designed, the best woman designed building, or like woman architect of the year or whatever. Like we come to a point where we don't have to use the gender as an adjective and just accept the best in one profession or the best leader or whatever that is.
So we talked about policy, we talked about education, we talked about redesigning business models. How else do you think, like, what type of solutions or, policies we should be seeking to sort of get there? And if we get there, when do we get there? Which is a very big question, but what do you think?
I don't think any particular entity has the answer. And I think you use the word collaborative, and I think collaborative solutions are where it's at. Because effectively, this has to be driven, and we will succeed if we have government, private business, NGOs, the media, education working in tandem and working in a collegiate way. At the moment, it's too fragmented. So consequently, there is, a solution based where we're still not there in relation to, for example, government. Because if you've only got representation, which is primarily, well, I like to say pale, male and stale in terms of white, pale, male and stale. Mm-hmm. So that is problematic in relation to policymaking, because there isn't a gender lens in relation to that. There isn't a diversity lens attached to that policymaking. And so therefore, if policy can be good for women and for Black and ethnic minority communities and for disabled people, it will be good for the general population. It will be so inclusive policies is my first prescription for inclusive and collaborative policymaking. And that's a messy and also difficult business, but it is the only way you can actually get to successful policy initiatives. And as I say, the Women's Enterprise Agenda in the United States has been, a roaring success. It came from nothing practically to what it is today. Can it be better? Yes, it can. But it had those ingredients of government, private business, education, media, and NGO involvement. So it had this unique perspective that was brought together. So you didn't have a groupthink situation. I think until we arrive there or nearly there, I think we need to set aside where women get featured and get highlighted and get showcased. The reason being is that then you then will continue with the all male panels and the all white. So until we actually have a better balance, I still am supportive of gender specific interventions and policy making, because it is a positive action activity which is needed until we have a more even playing ground. Is it possible, and how long? Well, it's taken you guys 40 years, or sorry, nearly 50 years in terms of your entrepreneurship, for 48% of all business starts are started by women. 50 years, so if we're going to be talking about across the board, it could take anything up to 100 years. And in some cases, certainly in terms of political representation here in the UK, it's going to be 200 years. So my concern is that it's about the glacially slow. I think we know what to do, but we're not doing it, and we're not doing it quick enough. So we need all those things you've talked about. We need that kind of, policy. We need the education element. We need good research. We need investment. But we need a willingness and leadership around this to really think the ecosystem. But, I've been around this sort of work for about a quarter of a century now, so I don't know if I'll be doing it for the next quarter of a century. So I doubt it. But what I was going to say is that I'd be optimistic that I've got colleagues that are as you say, the under 30s. So I feel optimistic that those young women are going to be taking forward this agenda, and I think they're going to be making far greater pace and progress, even more so, that's been made in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right. We're still, even if we don't want to be in that state, we're very much in still an awareness era where we have to make the world aware of the woman leaders or woman entrepreneurs or whatever to make that a norm eventually. And which is why it is still a need. And hopefully with this entire collaborative effort where the younger generation will push, this will eventually be a norm, and maybe our like great grandchildren will be like, oh, they used to call actress. That's funny. Like, why? And, you know, and maybe we'll get there. But currently you're right. Like, we have to sort of push to make this a norm, which means we have to repeat and repeat and just echo all the success that women do. Yeah. So speaking of that, and I guess to sort of wrap up our podcast with a positive note too, as a successful woman leader yourself, what would be your advice to women that are starting out or trying to survive within a business, or any progress maker really trying to make progress in an industry? What would be your advice?
I think my major piece of advice would be seek help, ask for help, don't be afraid to make the ask. And the network is, and your networks are hugely beneficial. So developing appropriate networks and mentors, both formal and informal, have been some of the more powerful elements. But investing in women need to invest in themselves. They just need to learn. They need to make sure that they're investing in their learning as well. But I think asking for help, seeking help, getting advice, getting support, really helping them develop their knowledge base and their confidence and their chutzpah, a bit of cheek, will really go a long way. I've always said, fake it till you make it.
I love that. That is so true.
And also international collaborative. Look abroad, be outward looking.
Thank you so much, Maggie. This was such a treat.
Well, I'm very pleased to be able to be involved. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Tune in next week when we sit down with Henry Gordon Smith, founder and managing director of Agritecture Consulting, a global urban agriculture advising firm that helps entrepreneurs with vertical farming feasibility studies, recruiting, and systems design. For more information on our events and our podcasts, visit us at whatswrongwith.xyz.